Okay, ready to unpack a Supreme Court case that's sending ripples through the legal world. We're diving deep into Biden v. Nebraska, the showdown over President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan.
It's a fascinating case. Really gets to the heart of executive power and the limits of what a president can do without Congress stepping in.
Right, we're talking $430 billion in potential debt relief. Poof, gone. Because the court essentially said, hold your horses, Mr. President. You need Congress on board for this.
Wow.
So we're going to break down how the court arrived at that decision, focusing on standing, and whether the Biden administration actually had the authority to implement this plan.
It's a classic separation of powers issue, highlighting the tension that often exists between the executive and legislative branches.
Okay, so let's set the stage. Back in August 2022, Biden announces this sweeping plan to cancel student loan debt. Up to $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients, $10,000 for others, with income limits, the whole nine yards. And they were basing this on the HEROES Act of 2003.
The HEROES Act was passed after 9/11 to give the Secretary of Education flexibility in aiding student loan borrowers during national emergencies. Think deployments, natural disasters, situations where people might struggle to repay their loans.
So the Biden administration argued the pandemic qualified as a national emergency, and wiping out this debt fell under the Secretary's power to modify loan terms. Seems like a logical argument, right?
Well, that's where six states, led by Nebraska, decided to sue. Now, they weren't arguing against student loan forgiveness itself. They were challenging whether the president could make this huge decision without Congress specifically authorizing it.
Ah, so it's more about who gets to make the decision, not the decision itself.
Exactly. This case initially gets dismissed by a district court, then an appeals court puts the brakes on the whole program, and ultimately it lands at the Supreme Court.
And boom, here we are dissecting a landmark case. So, one of the first things the court had to grapple with was standing. Did these states even have the right to bring this challenge in the first place?
Standing can be tricky. Essentially, you have to show you've been injured in some way to have the right to sue.
And that's where Missouri's involvement gets particularly interesting, right?
Absolutely. Missouri's standing rested on a state-created loan servicer called MOHELA, which stood to lose an estimated $44 million per year if the loan forgiveness plan went through.
Hold up, Missouri itself wasn't losing money. It was this MOHELA entity. So the court basically said, because MOHELA is connected to the state, its financial hit counts as an injury to Missouri.
That's exactly how the court reasoned it. But the dissenting justices weren't buying it. They argued that the states were just ideologically opposed to the plan and didn't have a real stake in the outcome.
So already we see this tension. How closely connected does an entity have to be to a state for its losses to give the state standing? What do you think about this as someone who deals with legal issues every day? Is that enough of a connection?
It's a really interesting question, and it gets at the heart of what standing is all about. The dissenting justices worried this could open the floodgates for states to challenge federal policies they simply disagree with, even if they're not directly harmed.
That's a big concern. Okay, now let's get into the meat of the case, the HEROES Act. Did it actually give the Secretary of Education the power to do what the Biden administration wanted?
The Biden administration argued that canceling debt fell under the Secretary's power to modify loan terms, which the HEROES Act explicitly allows during a national emergency. They basically said wiping out debt was a form of extreme modification.
But Chief Justice Roberts, writing for the majority, wasn't convinced.
Right. Roberts honed in on that word modify, saying it implies tweaking existing terms, not completely obliterating them. He drew a distinction between, say, reducing interest rates or extending payment timelines versus entirely erasing the debt.
So he's saying it's more like editing a document. Modify is like changing a few words, while cancellation is like deleting the whole thing.
Exactly. Roberts argued that canceling $430 billion in debt was in effect creating a whole new program, which went beyond the scope of what Congress authorized in the HEROES Act.
Now, Justice Kagan had a completely different take in her dissent, right?
Yes. She argued that the HEROES Act was written broadly intentionally, giving the Secretary wide latitude to address national emergencies. She saw wiping out debt as a legitimate tool in the Secretary's toolbox, especially given the economic hardship faced by millions of borrowers.
This case just keeps getting more complex. We haven't even touched on the major questions doctrine, which also played a big role in the decision. But before we go there, I have to ask, what stood out to you the most about these initial arguments from a legal perspective?
What struck me most is how this case really highlights the ongoing debate about the role of textualism in statutory interpretation. The majority took a very literal approach to the word modify.
Right.
While the dissent argued for a more purposive interpretation, considering the overall goals of the HEROES Act.
You know, it's fascinating how one word can have such a huge impact on a case with these kinds of stakes.
That's the power of language in the law, isn't it? Each word is carefully chosen, and judges have to grapple with how much weight to give to those choices.
Okay, before we get lost in a legal dictionary, let's talk about the major questions doctrine. It feels like the court really flexed its muscles with this one.
You're right. The major questions doctrine is a relatively recent development in administrative law, and it essentially says that if an agency wants to make a decision with massive economic or political consequences, Congress needs to give them very clear permission to do so.
So it's like a check on agencies, making sure they're not exceeding their authority on really big issues.
Precisely. Chief Justice Roberts invoked this doctrine in Biden v. Nebraska, arguing that wiping out $430 billion in student loan debt was a huge archy deal, and Congress didn't specifically authorize it in the HEROES Act.
So even though the HEROES Act gives the secretary power to modify loan terms during an emergency, the court said that power doesn't extend to something as sweeping as mass debt cancellation.
That's the gist of it. The court essentially said, look, this is a major policy decision with huge economic implications. If Congress wanted the secretary to have this power, they would have said so explicitly.
Okay, but Justice Barrett, while agreeing with the outcome, had some reservations about how the major questions doctrine was applied right.
Yeah.
What was her take?
Barrett's concurrence is really interesting. She essentially argued that while she supports using the major questions doctrine to clarify ambiguous statutes, she's wary of using it to essentially rewrite laws.
So she's saying we shouldn't be using this doctrine to legislate from the bench.
Exactly. She's urging caution, making sure the doctrine is used to clarify legislative intent, not to substitute the court's judgment for that of Congress.
I can see why that would be a concern. If the court gets too comfortable using the major questions doctrine to strike down agency actions, it could really shift the balance of power.
It's a valid concern, and one that legal scholars are actively debating. Some argue that the major questions doctrine gives the court too much power to invalidate agency actions, while others see it as a necessary check on the administrative state.
We'll definitely need to keep an eye on how this doctrine evolves in future cases. Now, we can't wrap up this deep dive without talking about the dissenting opinions, especially Justice Kagan's. She really came out swinging, didn't she?
She did. Kagan argued that the court had overstepped its bounds, interfering with the executive branch's ability to do its job and potentially jeopardizing the government's ability to respond effectively to future emergencies.
What specifically worried her about the impact on future emergencies?
She argued that the HEROES Act was designed to be a flexible tool, giving the secretary broad authority to address a wide range of unforeseen situations. She worried that the majority's narrow interpretation of the act would hamstring agencies during crises, making it harder for them to act swiftly and decisively when needed.
So it's not just about student loans. It's about setting a precedent that could have ripple effects across all sorts of government agencies and policy areas.
Absolutely. Kagan argued that the court's decision could have unintended consequences, making it more difficult for the government to respond effectively to future pandemics, natural disasters, economic crises, or any other kind of national emergency.
It seems like she's saying the court is inserting itself into policy decisions that should be left to the elected branches of government.
That's a core argument of her dissent. She accused the majority of substituting their own policy preferences for those of Congress and the president, essentially overstepping their role as judges.
So we have this tension between the majority's view that the president overstepped his authority and the dissent's concern that the court is now encroaching on executive power.
It's a classic separation of powers dilemma, and one that will continue to play out in future cases. What are your thoughts on all of this? Does the major questions doctrine raise concerns for you, or do you see it as a necessary check on agency power?
It's definitely a tricky issue. I see both sides of the argument, and I think Justice Barrett's concurrence really highlights the importance of finding the right balance. We need to make sure that agencies are accountable, but we also don't want to tie their hands so much that they can't effectively address crises.
That's a very thoughtful perspective. It'll be interesting to see how the court navigates this issue in future cases. But beyond the legal intricacies, there's a human element to this case that we can't ignore. Millions of borrowers were counting on this relief, and the court's decision has left them in limbo.
It's a good reminder that these legal battles have real-world consequences for people's lives. It's easy to get lost in the legal weeds, but at the end of the day, this case is about real people grappling with real debt.
Exactly. This decision has the potential to impact millions of borrowers, many of whom are already struggling financially.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Biden v. Nebraska, let's shift gears a bit and talk about the broader implications. What does this case mean for you, our listeners? What are the key takeaways you should be thinking about?
Well, for lawyers and law students, this case is a gold mine. It's a masterclass in statutory interpretation, standing separation of powers, and the evolving role of the major questions doctrine.
You're right. It's a case that touches on so many fundamental legal concepts, and it provides a really nuanced look at how the Supreme Court approaches complex issues.
If you're interested in administrative law, this case is a must study. It really highlights the limits of agency power and the importance of clear congressional authorization for any major policy decisions.
And even if you're not a legal eagle, this case has implications for anyone who cares about how our government works. It raises important questions about the balance of power between the branches and how much leeway the executive branch has to act without explicit congressional approval.
It's also a reminder that the Supreme Court isn't just some abstract entity. Its decisions have real-world consequences shaping policies that affect our daily lives.
So as we sign off on this deep dive, what's the one thing you want our listeners to walk away with? What's the big takeaway message?
I think the key message is this. Biden v. Nebraska is a landmark case that will have ripple effects for years to come. It's a case that forces us to grapple with fundamental questions about the role of the courts, the balance of power in our government, and the limits of executive authority.
It's also a stark reminder that the law is constantly evolving. This case will be cited and debated for years to come, shaping how we think about administrative law, the major questions doctrine, and the power of the Supreme Court.
So stay informed, stay engaged, and keep those legal minds sharp. The world of law is never dull, and cases like this prove just how much impact a single Supreme Court decision can have on our lives.
That's all for this deep dive.
Yeah.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.